solo growl. What's going on, guys? Mason and Ireland show. Momo is going to join us at some point here, I believe. Having a little technical stuff going on. That's okay. I've been doing this a long time. We should be fine. Lindsay, we're going to be okay?
I'm waiting for that. Waiting for that. Hello, guys?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
I'm here. Can anyone hear me?
And then the LeBron? Whole story behind it about what happened. And
oh my god, yeah, I want a long
her dad
story.
Didn't hold the phone right, and she wasn't plugged in, and then her son was in there.
Restarted, and then my baby had his binky, and then I the story will be a long one, I promise. So, I wanted to pick up on this, something we talked about yesterday a little bit. The Lakers are in an interesting position. Obviously, Anthony Davis still hurt, and they go into the break losing 7 of their last 10. Now, as John Ireland would say, that's not really the Lakers. At the same time, there are clear places where the Lakers could make additions. And we've got the trade deadline coming up on March the 25th. The buyout market will come after that. We've talked about some of those names. But I wanted to get LeBron's take on where the team is right now. This is what he said before the All-Star game.
I hope that they allow me to retire an All-Star, captain.
Well, I mean, okay,
I'm
going to
cut that off. I'm going to cut that off. Jorge, look above that clip. LeBron likes where the Lakers are right now.
Well, I mean, obviously we've hit the injury bug as of late and also with a little, you know, COVID restrictions kept a lot of our guys out. So, but I like where we are. I don't love where we are because we have losses. I mean, if we were 36-0, I'll be fine. But, you know, anytime we lose, I don't like it. So, but other than that, I like where we are, and I'm looking forward to the second half of the season. It's going to be extremely fun. Our group is motivated to get back to where we know we need to be, you know, going down the stretch into the playoffs. And, you know, for me personally, it's my job to be the MVP every night for our ball club in order to help us win basketball games. So that's been my motto since I came into the league.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been a struggle, obviously, without Anthony Davis for a stretch there without Dennis Schroeder. Who was in COVID protocol at one point, without Marc Gasol, who was in COVID protocol at one point. So they've been shorthanded. They've been dealing with injuries, and it's really hard to make a fair assessment of where this team is. Momo, are you there?
I'm here. I just called in. I don't know what's going on with our comrades. I've been talking to myself for the last 10 minutes.
Oh, well, it doesn't surprise me. I know you're always talking. It doesn't surprise me.
I know.
Me
I was like, hello, anybody there? Nobody there. It was like that time when your Comex didn't work and I was hosting the show all by myself and I didn't know it. That was
yes,
great.
That's true. Hello?
Yeah.
Is anyone there?
Hello? Hello?
So we just, I don't know if you heard that. I don't know if you heard that clip from LeBron, but I kind of want to talk about this. It's the All-Star break and you know, where is this team right now? Having lost 7 out of 10, and as I mentioned, without Anthony Davis. But I think there are some clear needs that could be and hopefully will be addressed either at the trade deadline or at the buyout market. Momo, what's their most pressing need?
Well, I would say just keeping up with the Nets, right? I mean, doesn't it feel like that at this point where I think they need to just get healthy, get their guys back? So far, I mean, what would you say? I think Wes Matthews has been a little bit
He's
of a
been
disappointment.
A disappointment. I think Marc Gasol has been disappointing.
Yeah, disappointing. And so they are the ones who see those guys up close and have a better read on whether or not those disappointments are just trouble adjusting to everything, a new system, new team, or if maybe those guys are have lost a step, if they're past their prime a little too much. And so that's got to be in the talent evaluation department with Rob Pelinka, with Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd, all the people who will be in that room who are assessing these guys day in and day out to say, okay, is this going to get better with time? Do they just need some time to adjust? Or do we need to go out and get somebody younger, somebody who can give us a little something different than what we're getting from those two? Those were two of their big offseason acquisitions, right?
Here's what I think is going on, at least for me. First of all, they don't have that Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, rim protector guy, rebounding guy, defensive body down low. They don't have that front court depth that they had last year. And it's not exactly what Marcus Gasol does. That's really not his game. But secondly, their three-point shooting has been absolutely awful. First 15 games, they shot 41%. Now, as a team, they rank 21st in the league in three-point shooting. And as you know, the three-point shot is what is deciding winners and losers in this league right now. So the question is, are you looking for a guy who can knock down threes, or do you trust the guys you have, and can you get that big body, maybe somebody like Hassan Whiteside, on the buyout market?
Yeah, and I think that is, they're going to have a lot of options. I'm having these flashbacks lately, Mace, of how different – you know, how we felt about the Lakers' last trade deadline. Remember when all the buzz was, oh, the Clippers are getting Marcus Morris. The Clippers got Reggie Jackson. The Clippers got all, you know, every target the Lakers seemed to have, they were in competition with the Clippers, and the Clippers got the guy. And the Lakers kind of got Markieff at the end.
Yeah,
right?
Markieff they got in the buyout market.
Yeah, in the buyout market. And it was like, oh, well, he's not Marcus, but at least he got a Morai, okay?
Yep.
That's what you call the Morai brothers, the Morris brothers. And it turned out that Markieff had a great run for them. He was a great competitor. And Marcus never really fit in with the Clippers. Reggie Jackson was good, but like wasn't a difference maker for them.
He was fine. He didn't make the difference.
Yeah, fine.
Sometimes adding pieces can just be adding pieces. Like I question the idea of, you know, Blake Griffin and how much he's really going to contribute with the Nets. He was having a bad season. He's not the player that he was. I just wonder how much. Well, I mean, we all know the name. It's a star name.
Yeah.
So are we excited about the star value of the name or what he's actually going to be able to produce on the floor? Sometimes I think that gets confused.
Yeah, and I think with Blake, like, we really don't know. I'll tell you this. He hasn't been right physically in a couple of years. I know he's tried to work on his knee. I know, you know, he's really worked hard at rehab and stuff, but you know, it's obvious that he was not right the last 2 years. And you can see that in the stats. You can see it in his play. He still has something to give, but that's what we've said about Marcus Gasol all year long too. You know, he still is a good player. He still makes good, smart plays out there. But he's not Marcus Gasol, defensive player of the year. He's not that
right.
That same defensive presence in the middle. He's not, you know, it's to me, it's one of those, you know, when guys get into their 30s, mid 30s, late 30s, it starts to go. And the question is, how much do you have left? Can you pull a Robert Horry and just kind of prolong that so that you're at your best in the playoffs and you make some meaningful contributions then? Maybe, you know, maybe Blake can, or maybe it'll just be kind of like addition. Okay,
yeah.
Hold up the bench. No.
Right, exactly, like the Clippers additions were last year. I mean, Marcus Morris played well, but Reggie Jackson wasn't a difference maker. And obviously, in the end, it crashed and burned in that series with Denver. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting. The ideal target for the Lakers is Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond is the guy, and the Lakers, as Mark Stein said yesterday on Twitter from the New York Times, said that the Lakers are confident that Andre Drummond will consider them as a landing spot, will consider them as a landing spot. To me, that's really encouraging. I think Andre Drummond could be a real impact player for the Lakers.
Yeah, the question is, will the Cavs go there? Will the Cavs actually do a buyout? And I don't know if you've been following Mr. Baron Davis on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What was that story on Twitter? It was about Dan Gilbert and Baron Davis.
Yeah. I mean, Baron essentially said he had an opportunity at one point in his career to do a buyout in Cleveland. Remember, Baron got traded there at Fort Blair, and he got traded and you know, for a first round pick, and it ended up being Kyrie Irving. Oh,
yeah.
Well, you trade. But the when Baron got traded there, he eventually wanted to do a buyout, and he wanted to go play for with LeBron, I assume, down in Miami. And he said Dan Gilbert would not do the buyout because Baron wanted to play with LeBron.
Right.
Like that was a big thing for him, and I think that is, you know, now that this is out here, I'll read you the direct tweet. Okay. I remember Dan Gilbert sent a message to me. he wouldn't let me out of my deal if I went to play with LeBron. Fact. He knew that that's where I was going, so they played hardball. He said if I went to play with LeBron, he would win a title. I told him LeBron is going to win one anyway. And obviously, Barron never got bought out of his deal to go play with LeBron.
Right, right.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's really – that's just petty. That's typical petty Dan Gilbert.
And maybe that's changed since LeBron, you know, came back to Cleveland, brought a title back there. Obviously, Dan Gilbert's been dealing with his own health stuff. He had a stroke a couple of years ago and has been dealing with his own health issues. So I think there's a lot of water under the bridge at this point. There's a lot of life that has happened. But if I'm the Cavs and you have a guy like Andre Drummond who has value in this league, it's a hard trade to make. But you want to do everything possible to trade him and get something in return rather than just let him go to the buyout market.
But the problem, Momo, is the number is so big on Andre Drummond. And the cap actually contracted this year. The cap went down a little bit. So to me, it's really difficult to trade a guy like Andre Drummond, who's on that kind of contract. He's making $25 million this year. It's hard to move a contract like that.
Yeah, it's very hard. And the problem is there's only one team that is a natural fit, and that's the Boston Celtics, because they have that huge trade exception.
They have the big trade exception,
from the Gordon Hayward signing. But Danny Ainge is a really good negotiator, and he's not going to bid against himself. Right, so he can take the contract into that cap space. He doesn't have to send out $25 million in salaries, which is, you know, what you'd have
within
to do
within 20% or whatever that whole thing is. Yeah,
right. But why would he give up anything when he's, you know, when he's in the driver's seat? And if you're the Cavs, there is a salary floor. I mean, they're still paying Kevin Love a lot of money, and that's another trade.
Yeah, they're paying Kevin Love $30 million.
Yeah, so they have to pay somebody. There's a salary floor. You can't just trade everybody away and pay nothing. You can't just,
right.
It's not like baseball. You know, baseball, you can go and play for $12 million. Like, and be like,
and by the way, and go to the World Series like the Rays.
Right. So it is a little bit different. It is a little different how they have set this up. But I think there's a market for Andre Drummond. I do think that they are going to have options. The question is, are any of those options good enough to take back salary? Are they going to get any young players or draft picks for him? You know, we're still a few weeks out. I think there's more of a market than any of the buyout contenders would hope. Right? I think there's more than just the Celtics. I think, you know, Toronto, Miami, there's other teams that need a center that he would be a good fit for. You know, look at a team like Portland. I mean, they're always kind of in on these types of
sure.
But they have injury. So, you know, we'll see. But I think it's going to be a fascinating one to watch. And it may not end up being pivotal because some of the buyout guys, like we weren't even really talking about Marquise Morris last year, and he ended up playing a huge role for them.
Exactly. Played in the finals. I mean, it could be somebody we don't see coming. It could be somebody that surprises us. I'm fixated on Andre Drummond. And I'm also fixated on Hassan Whiteside in Sacramento, who I think fills that same role, shot blocker, rim protector, rebounder, defensive presence. I think he also fits that. The problem is the Lakers don't even have a second-round pick until 2023. They don't have a first-round pick till 2027.
Right.
They don't have a second-round pick until 2023. So what do you actually do to trade for Hassan Whiteside? It makes it a tough deal to make.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Momo, are you going to be able to connect, or is it the Mason Show solo today?
No, I think I can. I'm going to keep trying, and I have some cautious optimism because it has always worked for us before.
Good. All right. So Momo is going to join us on a real line coming up. 877-710-ESPN. You want to react to anything. By the way, if you get through on the show, if you survive the painful screening process and Jorge lets you on, you win a Mason and Ireland t-shirt. 877-710-ESPN. Coming up next, is the three-point shot ruining the NBA? We've got that coming up for you next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hi, what's up? It is Tuesday. Thank you very much for being out there. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you a lot. Without you guys, we would not be able to do this dumb show every day. Ireland says I am pandering when I say those things, but I actually do mean them. So, interesting story on the front page, and I think we've got Momo somewhat on the show. Or maybe not. Maybe we're working on a technical thing. So there's a story on the front page of ESPN. And it points out that the three-point shot may not, in fact, be good for the game. So a couple of weeks back, they point out that Milwaukee played Minnesota a few weeks ago. And in a sparsely filled Fiserv forum, well, that's because of the COVID, the two teams attempted 96 three-point shots. That is one every 30 seconds. 96 three-point shots in that game. Now, 9 of the 10 Bucks who logged minutes attempted a three-pointer. Only Antetokounmpo and Pat McConaughton shot worse than 40%. So it was working. And even Minnesota, the team that lost, their performance wasn't awful. They were shooting at 35%. So now there are a growing number of NBA executives and coaches that think the problem isn't that NBA offenses are wrong for firing up an average of 35 points per game from long distance. The problem is that they're right. It would be tactical malpractice to spend a lot of time taking twos when you can make threes at a nearly 40% success rate. So, recent conversations with multiple league executives about the state of the game reveal a consistent theme. As the rate of three-pointers has exploded, the NBA might finally be reaching a critical mass. Some raise concerns because they believe the three-ball has created a monotonous rhythm to each game. So, it's an interesting question. Yesterday, I actually came on the air and said, I think that a four-point line would be really exciting for the game. A lot of you did not like the idea. Momo, in particular, hated the idea. And I guess when I look at these numbers and I see that a game can be comprised of 95 three-pointers, which is one every 30 seconds, that is monotonous. It's a little bit like baseball, with the either home run or strikeout mentality that we see in Major League Baseball. Either the ball leaves the yard and guys swing for the fences using launch angle on every attempt, or they strike out. It creates a monotonous pace to the game and technically less action. Do we have Momo back?
I'm back. I think I'm back.
Nice.
You know what I did? I'm super good at tech support. Turn the phone off, turn it back on.
You know, isn't that always the answer?
It really is.
Reboot.
Yeah. I had to do it twice, you know, and I had to switch to my other phone, which I don't like using this phone because this is the one I get calls on. But we'll see. You know, maybe we'll get some calls while we're on air.
Sure. Well, yeah. I was in the middle of talking about, were you listening? So what do you think of the take that there are just too many three-pointers in the NBA right now?
I agree with it. I don't think it's good for the game. I don't like watching it. To me, it doesn't feel like basketball anymore because so much of it's the same way I feel about baseball. Like, I don't like it when there's too many home runs.
Right.
You know, there's too many home runs I'll still never forget how unenjoyable an experience it was to watch the Dodgers-Red Sox World Series. Like, I just was throwing things at the TV. Stop trying to hit home runs.
Right.
Play baseball. And that's kind of how I feel with basketball sometimes, where like, especially when the number of 3-point shots gets out of control, and it's like, are we just, is that all we're doing now? Are we just going down and somebody shoot a three every time? There's no.
Well, here's the thing though, in terms of analytics, it's malpractice not to shoot a bunch of threes.
I know.
So the game has created its own problem. I mean, this is the same thing with home runs in baseball. The analytics are what has driven the sport to these extremes. And it's hard to say take a mid-range two when you can take a three-pointer and you can make it at a 40% percentage, which a lot of guys can now.
Yeah.
It's malpractice to do the other. So there's an interesting – and by the way, in baseball, they're talking about – we talked about Stan Kasten this yesterday – is that they are talking about deadening the baseball, that this year's baseball may be deadened a little bit, which I think increases the action in the game. All of a sudden, you might see a triple. You might see doubles off the wall. You may see teams steal a base. You may see teams play small ball more often, which a lot of people like. You know, that if you keep the ball in the yard, there will be more action, and guys won't necessarily swing for the fences in every at-bat. Now, here is what an executive says his idea for capping, for dealing with all the three-pointers is. A longtime league power broker who wishes to remain anonymous would curb inflation by limiting supply. Cap the amount of three-pointers a team can take over the course of a game. Over the first 42 minutes of the game, each team would have the chance to make 20 three-pointers from beyond the arc. Every shot beyond the arc after that would count as just 2 points. And then at the six-minute mark of the fourth quarter, they would return to allowing three-point shots. Now, is that unbelievably overly radical?
Yeah, it's too complicated. It's like... You know, like,
in other words, you're only allowed 20 makes. You're allowed 20 three-pointers.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't work. It's like, to me, it just doesn't work.
Well, how do you, I mean, here you are saying it's bad for the game. How do you fix it?
I don't know how you fix it. I think the only way to fix it is by thinking differently. Generally speaking, whenever somebody has found an edge in the NBA, right, whether it be the Spurs with foreign players, whether it be, you know, the Phoenix Suns with the 7 seconds or less, or the Warriors with the 3-point shooting, or Daryl Morey ball, right?
Yep.
Like, to me, the only way to fix it is to find a different edge, to find another edge which counteracts that. It's not by introducing some new rules. I mean, we can make this a more broader philosophical discussion. You know, we have this about the economy too, right? Like, do you fix things by introducing artificial caps on taxes or trade imports or this or that? There's a lot of people, like, most of the time when you do that, you have a bunch of unintended consequences that don't really make sense, and it incentivizes people to cheat. Okay? Like, look at the NCAA. You have all these stupid rules that don't really go with the flow of capitalism or the way that the NCAA should work. And so it incentivizes people to cheat. Anytime that there's rules that are put in that don't flow with the game, that don't make sense, it's just going to make people cheat around it.
Yeah, but here's the deal, Momo. And again, if you're accepting the premise that this is bad for the game, and by the way, 877-710-ESPN, the three-pointer now represents about 40% of all field goal attempts. That is up 61% from 2011, and the league could soon see a day when more than 50% of attempted shots are from beyond the arc. How else do you handle that?
Well, what they could do is just do away with the three-point shot. You could just say, okay, everything counts as two. A basket is a basket.
Now, you don't think that's too radical? Guys that have modeled their entire games after making three-point
shots
radical. All you of a sudden lose the opportunity to score three?
Yeah. You could move the arc back. You could make it harder to make. So now your percentages are going to be lower, and it's going to disincentivize the three. I think that's better than putting some artificial cap on number of threes you can take and make. You know, I definitely don't think you should put a 4-point shot in there, because that's just going to make
– No, that's actually – yeah, yesterday I was arguing for a 4-point shot until I read this article, and it totally changed my mind. I think this is a Kevin Arnovitz piece, right?
Okay.
And, I think Kevin wrote this.
And, yep, it is.
I think you have to have attended the Sloan Conference at least 10 times to write or read a story like that.
I read it, and you know how my reading skills are.
So wait, are you telling me you read more of that article than one of my long articles?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
In fact, I will tell you something. By the way, 877-710-ESPN. I'll tell you something. So Juan was reading something on ESPN off of, I guess, Apple News or whatever those things are. And he's reading, and he said, oh, my God, this is so long. I wonder if it's by Ramona.
Oh,
and he gets
man.
To the byline, and it was absolutely by you.
What was it about?
I don't recall now.
I actually write shorter now than I ever did.
You do write shorter than you used to, yeah.
I've really made a point of that. I go, okay, you know, 2,500 words is about the most people's attention spans can be. And the truth is you got to get the best stuff up high. You got to get your best stuff up in the first 500-600 words because nobody has any attention span anymore. Doesn't matter how good a writer you are.
Definitely not for that. Definitely not for that.
Wow.
A long epic piece, like the magazine pieces you used to do.
I know. I still write those. They just don't go in a magazine anymore. But like, so you literally will read some wonky, nerdy, 3-point shot thing over like a grand narrative that your friend Ramona writes? Dang.
You know, I like wonky and nerdy.
Dang.
That's part of my thing. Like, I like wonky and nerdy. I like these. I like the numbers. I like looking at dissecting the game. I actually find that really interesting.
Wow.
And not that I don't love your pieces. I mean,
no,
I think your stuff
don't.
Is fantastic. I read several paragraphs of every one of your stories.
Wow. That's brutal.
Those yeah, are it like, is. It's rough.
Yeah. That is. I don't know how to take that. Tell me the truth. How much of the podcast did you actually listen to?
Oh, the what did you
yeah.
what if I told you?
Yeah.
I listened to the entire thing.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a brilliant story.
Okay.
The Donald Sterling piece. Yeah. Podcasts, I consume a lot of podcasts.
Because I don't get through most of them. I listen to podcasts, but I have about a 20 to 30 minute listen.
Because is think that right? Like, and then you bail?
Yeah, it's usually a single serving workout. So it's usually I used to listen to it when I was driving and then I'll listen to the whole thing, but I don't drive anywhere anymore. So now I listen to it when I go for a walk or I hop on the elliptical.
It is when you go for a walk or do the, in my case, in the bike. Yeah, that's when I listen to podcasts.
Yeah. So however long my workout is, that's all I'm listening to.
Well, you were impressed by Oprah with Megan Prince and Princess.
Yeah.
Ex Prince and Princess. You were very big on that.
There's so few events that we watch and listen to. So few. Like, so we're all in this streaming world maze where you can watch anything at any time. Like, you know, like, do you ever watch a show? Like, I'm watching Call My Agent now. Do you know that show?
No, I don't.
Really good. Okay. But it came out like probably a few years ago in France. And then I heard about it over the summer. I'm finally getting around to watching it. And it used to be like when a show like that would come out, we would all wait for it each week. We would talk about it. You know, Game of Thrones. Remember how excited we were?
Yeah, the communal experience. Everybody's watching at the same time. You felt like that was the case with the Oprah interview with the Prince and Princess?
I mean, people were like live tweeting. I taped it, when did we tape anything anymore, right? I mean,
that's true. You DVR'd it, sure.
Yeah, I DVR'd it. And then I watched it after I put Daniel down to sleep, you know.
Right. It came on almost exactly after the All-Star game.
Yeah, it was great timing. But people on the East Coast got to see it earlier, which that never happens anymore.
So how would you compare Oprah and her interviewing style? Because you've been on my podcast. You've been on the Culture Pop. How would you compare my interviewing style to Oprah's? Because you really – we should have you back. You got very emotional during the podcast we did.
Well, it's also because you and I are friends, so you know me really well, and you know where to take the interview to get me to really open up, right? And I feel safe and comfortable with you that you're not going to like push too far. There's certain areas where like if I'm going to open up and go there, you don't do that with just some random person,
right?
You do that with somebody. You do that with a friend, and that they're not going to just go and turn it around on you and make you feel bad and have a trap quote or you know whatever it is,
right?
So I think that your interview style is similar to Oprah in that you make everyone feel like you're their friend. But
yes.
I didn't feel like you were trying to get me or anything. Like there's a feeling like when there's an antagonistic, she still got them to spill all the truth.
She did. She got them all to say all the stuff that she really wanted to say. Yeah, I actually did one with Scott Kaplan that's out right now.
Yeah, how was that?
Good. Cap is he's a tough onion to peel.
Did you make him cry?
What's that?
Did you make him cry?
Tried to.
I know you do.
Got close.
Is that possible with him? When is the last time he cried? That's usually a good way to.
I don't think he's a big crier.
Yeah.
But if you want to know more about Cap, you can listen to the Culture Pop podcast. It's search Culture Pop on iTunes and Spotify. It actually came out really, really good. All right, coming up next for you, Momo, at the end of last night, I put on a movie.
Which one?
And it made me think of this question. And hold the answer, okay? This is
okay.
A tease.
All right.
Why do we like bad guys so much? We're going to do that next. Then Tim McMahon is going to be here in about 15 minutes from ESPN. We'll talk about state of the NBA. We'll bring up this three-point shooting thing with him. We'll talk about the Lakers. What's the next move? What moves can they make? All that kind of stuff with Tim Bontemps in 15 minutes. Mesa in Ireland. Momo's in for John, 710 ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So last night, there's not really any sport. I don't watch. Do you watch any college basketball during the regular season? Just be honest.
Nope.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, I occasionally, like if I'm searching and there's absolutely nothing on, I will watch it until I can find something else.
And I know it's championship week and people get excited for that. And, you know, I wait until the field of 66 now?
I think
it's a field of
68.
68, right, with
oh
the
my
playing
God.
Games.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll do the brackets and all that stuff, and we'll have fun with it. And in the moment, like there's Friday the 19th, I think, is the first day of the tournament where everybody's playing all at once.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
fun.
Really, really fun and really cool. So we'll do all that stuff. But last night, didn't watch any sports. I watched I had a terrible meltdown last night. This was one of the most embarrassing meltdowns in history, food-wise.
Oh, please tell me.
So I'm pretty rocked.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for something, some kind of sweets. So I ended up on Domino's with those little bread, powdered sugar, yeah. Brown sugar.
Yeah, I know those. Yeah.
Those little pieces of dough that you dip the icing.
Yeah.
Oh, so friggin' good.
Yeah.
But I mean, I barreled through that and ate it fast. And I got to say, I had no self-respect when it was over.
Okay. So I've had a few of these lately, and I think it's just because I'm recovering from my surgery and like,
sure.
You know, you feel good, but you're also kind of trapped. Like you can't do too much. And so you're just home and I'm trying to, I lost all this weight, so I don't want to blow it. But anyway, but then when you blow it, you really want to blow it. I have found myself ordering just like so many, like you with your, fried chicken got me to do that the other night. Then the other day I go, you know what I feel like? I feel like SpaghettiOs.
Nice. SpaghettiOs?
SpaghettiOs. I'm like, I haven't had that since I was a teenager.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I know, but it was so good.
You got SpaghettiOs?
I had some in the like pantry.
SpaghettiOs aren't disgusting. They're delicious.
Oh, they're disgusting.
They're
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah, I eat a whole thing of SpaghettiOs with the meatballs. I was like, this is not food that I'm eating. This is like heavily, heavily processed. I mean, I went from ordering, you know, all organic, non-processed stuff on Erewhon a few weeks ago,
right,
like eating SpaghettiOs. Oh, but they were
Yeah, no, that's actually good. A lack of self-respect.
It is.
Eating SpaghettiOs.
It is. It was so good, though.
I think that donuts and pieces of dough dipped in cinnamon and icing are much worse than SpaghettiOs.
No way. I'm with Mason on this one. No way.
No,
no way. SpaghettiOs aren't even real food.
It's not food.
I don't even know.
One step above dog food. Yeah, it is. Well, it's how do they get this?
One step above dog food. It really is.
It really is. I mean, what? How do they get the sauce to be both tomatoey, cheesy, and sweet?
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty amazing.
A lot of additives to that. Food. All right. So, anyways, last night, Momo, I'm watching TV and I'm flipping around cable because I'm totally rocked and eating Domino's.
Yeah. Yeah. Domino's good, man.
That dessert is so good. So up comes Silence of the Lambs on cable.
Uh-huh.
And I am like so immediately hooked into Silence of the Lambs. And I noticed something while I was watching it. The Clarice is obviously the hero, right? Jodie Foster is the hero in that. And Buffalo Bill is the bad guy. But I found myself, I really kind of root for Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Like this clip right here.
Mm-hmm.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And I'm like, that guy is so cool. He's the bad guy. And then I was thinking about other movies where, technically, Heisenberg was the bad guy
on
Breaking Bad.
I know. But I root for him most of the time.
Rooted for him. Michael Corleone is the bad guy in The Godfather, Al Pacino. But you root for him.
Yeah.
And I wonder why we like bad guys so much. Like bad guys in sports we like a lot. Like who's an example of a bad guy in sports? A bad guy.
Like a really bad guy or a bad guy we root for?
There's somebody. Different. Yeah. Somebody,
Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman was, Dennis Rodman came across like a bad guy. What about Floyd Mayweather?
Oh, I don't root for him.
I don't, but he's got a bad guy streak in him.
Oh, he's more than a bad guy. Like to me, there's a difference between bad guy and bad guy we root for. Because bad guy we root for, you know what the difference is? Is somebody that's just good writing. Okay, on TV, like, The reason why Breaking Bad was so good is that, you know, Heisenberg starts off, obviously Heisenberg, you're Bryan Cranston's character. He starts off as a good guy.
Correct.
Who breaks bad because he gets cancer and he's trying to do this for his family. But then the series of choices obviously like leads him down this path that he kind of can't come back from. And he's turned and he's really the heel. And that you have a few, and Jesse starts off as a bad guy who kind of like, holds the moral line.
All right, Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick. There's a good example.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor.
McGregor. There's another good one.
I think that he's turned, though. I don't think people root for him anymore.
I kind of still root for Conor McGregor. I love that goofy walk he does when he goes into the ring.
Too.
Obviously, he got beat this last time out.
So Trevor Bauer. I used to root for Conor. But then the stuff about him and the, what was the assault charges or rate Lindsay? What's the back? So there was something about beating up women or whatever that was. There's certain things you kind of can't come back from with me. Like, I don't think you can, that's for me with Floyd. It's like, nope, done. You know, like now if Floyd really apologized and really owned some of his issues with women and the backstory, maybe we could all, you know, find have a healthy discussion about it, but he's defiant.
Yeah, it's just interesting that we're drawn to the characters who are bad guys. Like, I like Conor McGregor. I think Conor McGregor's entertaining.
He's entertaining. But don't you think that we're drawn to
Bill Belichick, I both love his way with the media and despise the way he handles it. Like, he's both for me.
He's both, but see, here's the thing. I think it's because we all have good and bad in us, and we all, but most of us just don't act on the bad all that much. Or if we do, we make sure we don't get caught, right? Like
I want to throw that. I want to throw that out there. 877-710 ESPN. Why do we love bad guys so much? And who is the best movie or TV bad guy of all time? The one that you love the most? 877-710 ESPN. Coming up next for you. Tim McMahon is coming on from ESPN. We'll talk about where the Lakers are right now, what improvements, what acquisitions they might be able to make between now and the buyout market, and also this issue of are there too many three-point shots being taken in the NBA. That's all coming up next for you, Tim McMahon, plus your calls, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Yeah, by the way, our friend Freddie Prinze Jr. says bad guy he loves to love is Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Okay.
Right, what's that called? The is that called the Ode to Joy? Maybe something like that. Some piece of classical music that is associated with that.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Hans Gruber's a good one. Alan Rickman, the great Alan Rickman, who passed away, I think, a year or two ago. Great, great actor. So, yeah, and we'll get to some of your calls here coming up, too. And Tim McMahon's going to join us. And I think it's interesting, the three-point shot piece, which I'm fascinated by, I want to bounce off Tim. If the game has gotten out of balance and now there are just too many three-point shots. Right now, about 40% of all shots taken in the NBA are three-pointers. And some people think that could increase to half of all shots taken in NBA games, which is crazy.
So my buddy Ken Field, he's a producer for, he used to be a producer for ESPN and driving our listeners. He says, what if they narrowed the lane? I mean, it was only widened because of Wilt's dominance. That would get big guys closer to the basket and incentivize low post play. Also, if you widen the court, so, you know, just 2 feet on each sideline so you don't lose seats, then the three-point line can be a universal distance, right?
You don't get that corner three.
Yeah, the corner three is the shortest shot.
Yeah.
The shortest three-pointer.
All right, let's bring Tim McMahon into this, cool?
All right.
Tim McMahon joins us right now. Tim, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How about you?
Everything is good. We were just talking about that the piece on ESPN.com right now. I think it was written by Kevin Arnovitz about how the three-pointer has taken over the NBA, how there was a game a couple of weeks ago, there was on average one three-pointer taken every 30 seconds, that 40% of all shots in the NBA right now are three-pointers, and it could see as high as 50% someday, the way the game is going. Do you think the three-pointer is hurting the NBA?
No, not at all. I mean, look, the NBA offense in the NBA is the best it's ever been. I mean, when look, the Mavericks last year had the most efficient offense in NBA history, and I believe there's four teams this season that are more efficient than that offense. Mm. So, you know, look, people like scoring. There's more scoring, more efficient scoring than there's ever been in the NBA. People like, you know, chicks dig the long ball. So do dudes. I mean, I enjoy watching Steph Curry come up and know anytime he's within 35 feet, really, if he crosses half court, He's a threat to launch. Same with Damian Lillard. I enjoy the way that it opens up the floor. It opens up driving lanes. You know, you obviously you've got these unbelievable athletes who can take advantage of that space and, you know, do all kinds of things attacking the rim. So, to me, I think the game is in a great place right now.
Tim spent a lot of years watching every minute of the Daryl Morey, James Harden Rockets down in Houston. And some of those games, Tim, were, I would say, harder to watch than the beautiful basketball you're describing with Dame Lillard and Steph Curry. Like, there is a sort of Frankensteinish quality to it, though, if you try to play that way and really go all the way with it, right?
Well, you know what, though? I don't think that was so much. The complaints about the Rockets in terms of, you know, the style wasn't really about they shoot too many threes. I mean, people, if they had an off night, people want to blame that. If they missed like 27 straight threes in a game, 7 of the Western Conference Finals, people might point to that. But really, when people complained about the style of the Rockets, it was four guys standing around and James Harden dribbling the air out of the ball, playing isolation basketball to extremes that we had never seen before. And again, you know, you can nitpick the style of that. You can, you know, make the case, well, it didn't work because they didn't win a championship. You know, I think I would argue that it worked awfully well you know, giving them a chance to be in, even in the championship conversation. But I think the complaints there were people didn't like watching one guy dribble with everybody else standing around. You know, you're seeing a lot of, for example, the Jazz are launching up a ton of threes. They're making more threes per game than any team in NBA history. And, you know, that's a team that the ball is moving. I mean, it's like a popcorn machine.
Yeah.
You know, the Warriors, you know, when the Splash Brothers were in full effect, you know, same type of way. You know, Steph's a guy, he can create his own off the dribble, but so much of what he does is gives the ball up, you know, runs off a maze, a screen, gets it back, that type of thing. Again, I think a lot of the high-volume three-point shooting teams are really fun to watch.
Let me ask you about the Lakers here. The Lakers obviously lose 7 out of 10 going into the break. They're without Anthony Davis. They were without Dennis Schroeder for a portion of that stretch too. But if you look at the Lakers and the March 25th trade deadline, you look at the buyout market, what do they need? What's the addition they need, in your opinion, to repeat as champions?
A healthy Anthony Davis. I mean, let's not complicate this. If LeBron and AD are healthy, then the Lakers are probably going to be the favorites. Maybe, you know, maybe the Nets would be favored, depending on how they look the rest of the season. But if LeBron and AD are healthy, I would put my money on the Lakers. And, you know, I mean, look, can they make an upgrade here or there? You know, can they maybe get a big man with some athleticism, something along those lines? Sure. We can talk about kind of filling in the fringes of the roster. But if they have a guy who is the best player of this generation and another guy who's a perennial All-NBA type of dude, healthy, I like their chances for Pete.
So Tim covers the Utah Jazz, I think, you know, really for the last, what, 3-4 years, Tim? What's the
Yeah, difference? 4 or 5 years now. Certainly the last year of Hayward and then the transition to, if you want to call it, the Donovan Mitchell era.
So what's the biggest difference this year? Why are they all of a sudden running away with the Western Conference?
Well, look, one point that I do remind people of with the Jazz, and you know, I mentioned this in the story I wrote about them recently, is the Jazz going on an extended tear into regular season. Not only is it not unprecedented, it's not unusual. They've gone, you know, there was a point last year where they won 19 of 21. You know, the year before that, they had 12 of 13 and 11 of 13, I believe. You know, they go, you know, since Donovan's been there, they've gone on these long, extended, dominant tears every single season. You know, the question is, can they sustain it? And, you know, can they make a deep playoff run? And, you know, I would say that there's two things that are really three things, I would say, that are the biggest difference. One, the three-point shooting, they have really leaned all the way in on being a high-volume three-point shooting team that is also extremely high efficiency. Two, Mike Conley is clearly much, much, much more comfortable than he was last season. I mean, it took a couple of injuries to get him into the All-Star game, but unquestionably playing at an All-Star level, where last season admittedly was a struggle for him adapting after spending all those years in Memphis. And then three, Jordan Clarkson, you know, former Laker Jordan Clarkson. He made a major impact when he got there last season. The bench went from bad to pretty good. He's clearly the strong, strong, strong favorite for sixth man of the year. And, you know, and he is a big part of, you know, the way they play. He's become a knockdown three-point shooter and a guy who can always, you know, create off the dribble. I mean, they're a team that's always going to have four shooters on the floor, at least two guys who can initiate offense, who can facilitate for others. And then, obviously, with Rudy Gobert and now Derek Favors coming back, they're always going to have a role man and a defensive anchor on the floor as well.
Tim, I want to go back to the Lakers because that's my team, and it's our team here in L.A. So,
I thought the Clippers were LA's team now.
Oh, Tim.
Tim, you're going to get yourself banned.
Yeah, Tim. That's
what Ohm told me.
Ohm is wrong. Don't trust Ohm.
So the one thing I think the Lakers could use is front court depth. Somebody who is they don't have their Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee anymore, and Marc Gasol isn't really that guy. I'd love to see him get a rim protector. Love to see him get a rebounder, a defender down low. Andre Drummond is in Cleveland right now. There is talk that he may be on the buyout market. What do you think the odds are that he's bought out and then winds up with the Lakers?
Well, I saw that NBA insider and Pro Bowl receiver Allen Robinson had him going to the Nets, and certainly I think there's a strong possibility of that happening. I honestly, though, like if you're looking for a rim protector, you know, the guy's obviously a dominant rebounder, but if you're looking for a guy who's a big-time finisher and a great rim protector, Andre Drummond's not that guy. I mean, he can fill it up in terms of grabbing every rebound in sight. But if you look at his percentages finishing around the rim, they're not good. He's not, you know, he's not a great defensive player. But, you know, look, Gasol definitely looks like a guy who is running out of gas. He's always going to be in the right spot defensively. And, you know, they get plenty of stops with him on the floor, but he's not giving them a whole lot offensively. To me, as much as rim protection, I think they could really use the lob threat that, you know, McGee provided them and Dwight provided them. I think they missed that element of the offense. But the other thing is, let's be realistic. When it comes to playoff time, isn't AD going to play the vast majority of the minutes at center?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, again, I think we're, and I understand why, but I don't think that whether they get a springy big man or not is really going to have that much impact on the Lakers' chances of repeating.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Tim, because last year, you know, AD obviously was in their best lineups. I think AD was just playing center. But
sure,
there's two guys that you have to decide, okay, Jokic in the West, Gobert in the West, and then if it happens to be the Sixers in the East, then who matches up with Joel Embiid? Okay, like is that Gasol?
Right.
You know.
Well, that's all legitimate questions, and I would say, you know, there's just as good a chance just asking who matches up with DeAndre Jordan, and that's a little bit easier of an answer. The problem is, and you also got to cover KD and James Harden and Kyrie Irving. But I think Jokic, like your best chance on him is going to be AD, anyways. You know, Gobert. I think your best chance with Gobert is making him be the guy who's covering AD and spreading him out defensively, you know, being able to pull him away from the rim by not having that traditional center. You know, I think if you're playing a traditional center against the Jazz instead of AD at the five, you're almost doing them a favor because you're allowing Gobert to play comfortably in that rim protecting role. So, you know, yeah, I just think that really Embiid might be the exception there. I just think that the Lakers' best lineup on a regular basis is going to have Anthony Davis at the five.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, last thing for you. We were talking about bad guys in movies. So when I say who's the best villain in movie history, who do you say?
The best villain? God, you put me on the spot here.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. We do the tough
that's
interviews.
He's usually pretty good on the spot. I don't know. He's pretty
Scarface?
Quick.
I mean,
sure.
If you're going to a classic, Tony Montana.
Tony Montana is a great one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I'm getting up there in the years, so I'm gonna lean on the classics.
Okay, I like it. I like it, Tim. Hey, Tim, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
And Mazel Tov on the engagement.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations on your engagement. Yeah.
Oh, how sweet. Thank you so much. Life's good.
All right. Good. Thanks, Tim.
Okay. See you guys.
There's Tim McMahon. Yeah, he got engaged over the All-Star break.
Yeah, it was cool. It was it was one of those good, like, he had his daughter, I think, taking the photo. So it was, cool. Yeah.
Very cool. By the way, Tony Montana is exactly the kind of guy I was talking about. He's a bad guy that you root for. Say hello to my little friend. He is he's quotable. He's obviously a bad guy, but you love him and you root for him.
Yeah.
Very much like Heisenberg, very much like any of these bad guys, but you like Tony Montana, even though he's doing all this heinous stuff.
I think the Breaking Bad is such a good study in bad guys,
right? It's such
well, great. hold this conversation because we've got to get a break. And 877-710-ESPN. You heard what Tim McMahon said. He said didn't really indicate that it was especially high priority to get Andre Drummond because in the playoffs, all of the best Laker lineups are going to be Anthony Davis anyway. What do you guys think? 877-710-ESPN. Mason, Ireland, this is 710-ESPN.